on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
It's 90 minutes past 3 o'clock, so Dr. Kermode is here. We have some reviews coming up for Aliens.
Oh, now he's doctor. Now it's all right.
Well, your doctorate doesn't stand, I don't think, next to, you know, someone so eminent as Richard Forty. Right. In the same way that my doctorate doesn't stand next to yours.
No, the reason your doctorate doesn't stand next to mine is you didn't do anything.
I got presented one and I wore
a
gown.
You got presented one, yeah. Some of us did 4 years' work and wrote a thesis, what is still sitting in a library.
Yeah, some of us didn't have to. Who's the fool?
Exactly, yeah. You and Roy Wood.
Okay, so No Country for Old Men. We'll certainly get to that. I'm looking at my list here for the box office top 10, yeah. And I've got the same movie at 4 and 3. And
no, yeah, it's wrong. They should have logged it. There's a corrected one. It's actually Charlie Wilson's War at 3.
Okay, right. So we'll do that when we get there. At 10 this week, The Kite Runner,
which is fine. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's fine. It's a difficult book, and they've had a sort of strong bash at it. Good score, incidentally.
B movie at 9.
Rubbish. I mean, you know, standard thing about, it's not a kid's movie, it's a grown-up movie, it's pretending to be a kid's movie. And I think everyone is now solidly agreed that the trailer in which Steven Spielberg tells him, you know, you might as well make a cartoon, is funnier than anything in the film itself.
Dan in Real Life at 8.
Television film, and demonstrates why it is that Juliette Binoche is so good at doing existential angst and staring into the void, but really isn't very good at doing, you know, homey-type comedy.
And we have Alvin and the Chipmunks there at number 6.
The thing with Alvin and the Chipmunks is this. As soon as people start doing imitations of chipmunks, there's a whole part of your body that naturally starts laughing. I mean, it's no masterpiece. But I laughed, and so did James King. And if he tells you he didn't, he's lying.
Enchanted at 5.
Haven't you skipped over the Golden Compass at 7?
Golden Compass at 7.
Thank you. I thought we just left that out. I just want to say, you know, hanging in there, obviously doing much better than it did in America, where, you know, in America they had certain religious problems with it. It was boycotted by the Catholics over here, and no such thing, but it still doesn't have the substance it ought to have.
Alvin and the Chipmunks at 6.
You know, there's something funny about chipmunks, that as soon as you hear people doing an imitation of chipmunks, your body
Enchanted
just starts
at 5.
Which I loved. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Thought it was fabulous. Seen it twice. Took my daughter to see it. She loved it too. It's great. Go see it. It's really good.
We have St. Trinian's at 4?
Yeah, St. Trinian's at 4.
St. Trinian's at 4. Rubbish. Charlie Wilson's War at 3.
Yeah,
now,
go on.
Richard in Cambridge, having avoided listening to Mark's review of Charlie Wilson's War until after I'd seen it on Saturday, can I agree with him entirely?
Thank you.
I enjoyed the film, especially the performance of Philip Seymour Hoffman. It felt a little queasy about the lack of a wider picture. Like Mark, I could easily have sat through at least another half an hour as we watched the situation unravel.
And a half an hour that actually gave you some kind of context for it. I mean, that's the problem. At the end of it, you just think, is it all right to just say, well, we spent all that time killing Russians?
When I emailed a friend who lives in America about it, he informed me that it had been reported in the States that Aaron Sorkin had originally penned a different ending. In the first draft, the film finished...
But the Russians won.
In the first draft, the film finished with a shot of the Pentagon in flames. However, when Joanne Herring, played by Julia Roberts, read this, she threatened to sue, claiming there could be no direct link between her actions and the events of 9/11. On another subject entirely, my father, says Richard in Cambridge, went to see Stardust at the local cinema. It's the first time he'd been to the pictures since the original release of The French Connection in 1971.
Blimey,
has anyone else ever gone so long between cinema trips? So this is not people who have never gone.
No.
But from 71 to, well, I don't know if it's the end of 2007, but let's say 2008.
Yeah.
That's a big jump. Can anyone beat Richard's
The
dad?
Implication there, though, and actually it's not such a bad implication, is that after The French Connection, you just think things aren't really going to get much better than this, because French Connection is terrific. I mean, obviously, if he held out for 2 years, he would have got The Exorcist, and then he probably could have drawn a line under it. But French Connection is a wonderful piece of work.
Stuart in Glasgow saw Charlie Wilson's War, liked the film a lot, but what scared me were the three jaw-droppingly bad For Future presentation previews they showed. One was Penelope, about a woman with a face like a pig causing people to jump out of windows. One was National Treasure. The clips were so bad the audience were laughing at it.
US number one box office hit.
The final film was to be Kind Rewind, which looked awful.
Be Kind Rewind was the Michel Gondry movie.
Right. I can't wait to hear Mark's uber rant when he reviews these turkeys.
I haven't seen that yet, but I have to say that sounds like a really good idea. The idea is that people have to reenact movies to put them back on videotape after the videotape has been blanked.
We have P.S. I Love You at number 2.
Which is rubbish. And if you remember, Andrew Collins said he didn't even get to the end of the film and he didn't feel there was any need to do so. And I've subsequently caught up with it and it's rubbish. It really is rubbish. But I was in a screening the other day and a very, very nice woman said, the problem is I really enjoyed that film. And I was genuinely, you know, three steps back in amazement. Surely you're putting me on. Nobody could have enjoyed that film.
Number one, still, I Am Legend.
And I am not as good as the other two versions of this story. And I am trying quite hard, but I'm not quite getting up to the mark. I mean, the thing with it is, it really wants to be intelligent modern sci-fi, and yet it's completely hamstrung by things like attempting to work Bob Marley and the Wailers into this apocalyptic story. And Bob Marley never came up with a theory that you could inject people with goodness that would therefore inoculate them against the evils of the world. He just didn't. That's just not true.
We have absolutely stacks of correspondence from people who've already seen No Country for Old Men. What are we going to do first?
No Country for Old Men.
Should we do that first?
Yeah,
then?
Shall I pass you that, which is actually the running order that you should have?
I can't be bothered with running orders.
No, but it's just then you'll know what's coming up next.
Let's do No Country for Old Men.
Let's do No Country for Old Men, but are you about to do...
No.
Not at three... Oh, I see, fine. I'm just...
What, at 3:25?
I don't know.
I'm just a spectator.
Should we do No Country for Old Men?
Look at the clock. Is it time for the news?
I'm too busy looking at you. Last time I look at the clock, everyone says, oh, you're looking at the camera. You're mugging for the camera. It's like television. He keeps looking at the camera. He's not looking at the camera. He's looking at the clock, all right?
3:25.
No Country for Old Men.
Are there any movies out there?
There are. New movie by the Coen brothers, which premiered at Cannes, adapted from a Cormac McCarthy novel, which is one of those rare things, a recent novel that I have read. And I have to say, if you've read the novel, the film is incredibly close to it, right down to the kind of nihilistic, very strange, open ending. Several nominations for this. So the BAFTAs got 9 nominations, including, as you probably know, Best Director, Best Film, and famously Best Editor, Roderick Janes, who, as we all know, is a nom de plume for the... actually, not nom de plume. What is it if it's just a name that you make up but you don't write it down? Anyway, it's the
pseudonym.
Pseudonym, thank you. Yeah, why didn't I remember that word? Pseudonym for the Coens themselves.
Not so much for your doctorate against mine, is it?
Thank you, but it's a doctorate in English rather than in French, Simon. Thank you very much. So, in 80s
I'm
Texas...
I'm a doctor of letters, I'll have you know.
A doctor of lettuce?
Yes, that'll
that's going to be great. With it. Okay, in 80s Texas, Josh Brolin stumbles across the aftermath of a botched drug deal, something which has gone hideously wrong. He takes the money, then he is struck by an attack of conscience which takes him back to the crime scene and puts the bad guys on his tail. Meanwhile, Tommy Lee Jones, representing the old guard, the old world, is a sheriff who is coming to the end of his career, is faced with an apparently new form of evil in the scary haircutted form of Javier Bardem. Here's a clip, and bear in mind, Javier Bardem speaks very quietly in this clip. This is him threatening a garage owner.
How much? 69, see? And the gas. Y'all getting any rain up your way?
What way would that be?
I seen you was from Dallas.
What business is it of yours? Where I'm from? Friendo?
I didn't mean nothing by it.
Didn't mean nothing.
Just passing the time. If you don't want to accept that, I don't know what else I can do for you. Might be something else.
I don't know. Will there?
Is something wrong?
With what?
With anything.
Is that what you're asking me? Is there something wrong with anything?
Will there be anything else?
You already asked me that.
Oh, well, I need to see about closing then.
See about closing?
Yes, sir.
What time do you close?
Now. We close now.
No, it's not a time. What time do you close?
Generally around dark. At dark.
You don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Sir?
I said... You don't know what you're talking about. What time do you go to bed?
Sir?
You're a bit deaf, aren't you? I said, what time do you go to bed?
Oh. Somewhere around 9:30. I'd say around 9:30.
I could come back then.
Why would you be coming back? We'll be closed.
Yeah, you said that.
And that is very much the tone of his character. This absolutely implacable, really scary, never raises his voice. And when... sporting this extraordinary haircut, which when the film first played at Cannes, I mean, there were gasps of breath the first time, because Javier Bardem's a very, very beautiful man, and he comes on with this really strange... It looks like the kind of haircut that John Paul Jones had in the sort of early, you know, around Stairway to Heaven kind of period, only dark and really, really scary. Which
so he's normally a really beautiful man, because anyone who's seen any clips from this will just be thinking... You don't want to go anywhere near him.
No, it is the face
from the haircut.
The face of evil. Now, here's the brilliant thing about the movie. Several things. Firstly, it sees the Coen brothers going right back to the form of Blood Simple. It's stripped down in the way that Blood Simple is. I did an on-stage interview with them, and I said, look, it's very much like Blood Simple, isn't it? And they said, what are you saying, that we're repeating ourselves? They said it sort of ironically, but also slightly hurt. Then, no, it's, I mean, Blood Simple is an absolutely beautifully formed movie. I think this is the best thing they've done since Fargo, but it does have that same kind of stripped-down sense. You have a terrific central performance surrounding surrounded by a brace of very, very good supporting performances. Tommy Lee Jones is really good as the old school sheriff who thinks that the world is falling apart around him. And one of the sort of key philosophical themes of the novel and of the film is the world has changed. We are now facing a new form of evil that we never had before. Now, there's a number of mitigating factors against this. First one is, of course, that the movie actually has a slightly period setting anyway. It's in the 80s. Second one is there's a central conversation in which Tommy Lee Jones talks to an older guy who says, you know, describes this terrible crime that happened and then says, look, that happened way, way back, 30s and 40s. This stuff has always been around. But the Coens feel, and I know this because I asked them and they said yes, that they're in a certain point in their life, when which we all get to after, you know, mid-40s, when you start to think the world is going to hell in a handcart and I have kind of lost any sense of the world's moral compass. And the film does a brilliant job of dramatising that without ever seeming pompous or portentous, because at the heart of it, it's a very simple thriller. It's a thriller about somebody finding a bag of money and believing they can get away with the bag of money, but making one tiny mistake which sets a chain of events, you know, on their trail, and that's it. They're never going to get away from it. Kelly MacDonald, I think, got a BAFTA nomination for Best Supporting Actress, which is fantastic because she does a brilliant, you know, southern drawl, because, of course, you know, she's a Scottish actress. I think still best known for her performance in Trainspotting, but a real revelation here. And on the basis of this, I'd say she has American stardom waiting for her. Beautifully shot by Roger Deakins. An amazingly kind of empty soundscape. I mean, you really get that sense of wilderness, of, you know, arid landscape, of there being some kind of lonely, desolate place out there that the film is taking you right into. Like all the Coen Brothers movies, brilliant mix of horror and humour. There are moments when you don't know whether to laugh, cry, wince. You end up doing all three. And I've now seen it 3 times, and first time I saw it in Cannes, loved it. Second time, thought it was, you know, even better. And third time round, I thought it was a lot funnier than I thought it was the first 2 times round. It's, I think, a really, really fine piece of work. Clearly a contender for Best Film nomination at the Oscars on Tuesday, which I believe we are doing live on what is now known as News 25 Live.
Yes, it's one of those radio News 24, BBC World, anyone else who wants to take it.
Yes.
Moments.
You and me leading the public through the Oscar nominations as they happen.
Because we know that's going to happen, because that's only a press conference anyway, whether the Oscars...
No, the Oscars have said they're going to go ahead regardless. And I've already said to them they are going to sort the dispute out in time. It will be. I just cannot see it happening, that it's going to scupper the Oscars.
Loads of people on No Country for Old Men. Let's just wish
all
through
good, I hope.
Somewhat. Let's have a look. Jim says, Simon and Mark, saw No Country for Old Men last Saturday, thought it very impressive. However, not as many are saying... the Coen's best. I would like to still think that Blood Simple, Miller's Crossing, The Big Lebowski as superior efforts. I did think the ending was a little too unconventional for its own sake.
It is the ending of the novel. It's one of those things that is how the novel ends.
Still, the performances were brilliant and the tension consistent, certainly worth going to see. Dear Abominable Dr. Kermode, No Country for Old Men is possibly the Coen Brothers' finest. And are you pronouncing the J or not in Javier?
Javier
Bardem, so chilling that you forget he looks like a monkey gone rogue. He looks like Peter Tork from The Monkees.
He does.
Without giving anything away, can the good doctor comment about the controversial ending with some I just found confusing? So it's the ending of the book, so it's true to the book. Will people who haven't read the book go, eh?
Well, no, I think that in the end, here's the way of understanding the ending. The point about both the book and the film is it's not plot driven, okay? It's not to do with solving the crime. I mean, actually, in the end of it, pretty much everything is laid to rest except for the fact that the evil continues. And then what happens is there's a description of a dream. And actually, I think, and by third time round, I think it's the perfect ending. But first time round, it did catch people off guard. I mean, people at Cannes definitely went, what, eh? You know?
Simon, on this... This is the ultimate in Emperor's New Clothes filmmaking. Just because it's slow, nothing...
Not slow! How can it be slow? It starts with a bloodbath. How slow is that?
Nothing happens, and it can't think of an ending. Does not make it deep or impressive. Boring as hell, not as clever as it thinks it is. Give me those 2 hours back. Steve, our friend in Prague, is back on.
Hello, Steve.
Looking forward to hearing what Dr. Kermode has to say, hoping he agrees with my admittedly minority view that No Country for Old Men is a fair way short of a masterpiece.
That's not.
Great acting and cinematography, let down by weak characterisation and a fairly daft story. The main characters are little more than ciphers for the often irritating and silly philosophising. Free Will versus Determinism from Javier. Things Ain't What They Used to Be from Tommy.
From Tommy.
Consequently, while the film mostly held my attention, I was never gripped, didn't really care if the characters lived, died, had a happy or sad ending. Good but not great, not even the Coens' best film. I'm sure a man of the Doctor's intelligence and perception will find little to fault with these arguments.
No, I love the film, but actually that's a very smart summation of the film's philosophy, that you know, Free Will versus Determinism from him, and Things Ain't What They Used to Be from her.
Tommy Lee
Jones. Very good.
And if you do go and see the movie and think it's a bit grim or it's a bit scary or you're a bit tense, just think of Javier as Peter Tork from The Monkees.
And that, and suddenly it'll all go away.
It'll be fine. More of this to come. It's 3:34. Paul in Paris.
Hello, Paul in Paris.
Now, this is because we had a listener who had a father who went to see The French Connection.
Yes.
Then went to see Enchanted. And that was it Stardust?
Stardust.
Nothing in between.
Yeah.
Paul in Paris. Can't match your other listener's father, but I have been to the cinema I haven't been to the cinema for 5 years. Won't go again until they stop selling popcorn. So I suspect I might get there. Why sell a snack that crunches when people are at an event that is dependent on the audio? But
that was the Barry Norman point. Barry Norman always said, loudest food, what's the point?
Paul says you might as well sell tall hats at the snack bar. What a great idea.
Very good.
What a great
tall
idea.
Tall hats and popcorn, sir?
Eamon, my dear old dad went to see Patton in 1970. Fell asleep.
Elvis's favourite film.
Fell asleep in the first hour. A very interesting fact, Mark. Thank you. He then went 30 years without going again. I was working at the cinema at the time, and he got to come and watch Sea of Love with Al Pacino, during which he fell asleep within the first 20 minutes. He then snored loudly and had the unpleasant task of waking my own dad every 5 minutes for the whole of the film. This was tricky because dads don't have to do what their sons tell them to, regardless of whether they're wearing an usher's uniform or not. So while it wasn't quite as long as The Gap, I reckon he gets an award for having a 30-year gap and still not actually seeing either of the films that he went to see.
Very good going.
And I like this from Neil. Managed to catch most of your radio programmes this week, and every time you mention the words Dr. Kermode, 30 seconds later, he appears.
I know.
How does he do this? Do you keep him in a dark cupboard ready to appear when his name is mentioned, or does he use a Harry Potter flu network? No. It's just you're always hanging around.
I am. I've just got nothing better to do. I'm like the Gimp in Pulp Fiction.
Thank you for all the people who said that they will sponsor us when we do for Sport Relief.
Yeah.
It's a long story. Anyway, it turns out that we are going to do a 3-mile run.
6-mile.
And we do movie reviews as we go.
Do it. Yes.
We can't. There will be proper and legitimate ways whereby you can sponsor us. Yeah. We'll tell you next week once we've got all the gubbins sorted out.
If anyone asks you to do it before, then it's not us.
Hold on to the money. What else is new, Doctor?
Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, which nominated for a couple of Golden Globes, including Best Original Song. I think it attempts to do for the pop biopic what Airplane did for the Airport series, although not half as successfully. So John C. Reilly as Dewey Cox, whose life is strangely similar to that of Johnny Cash in Walk the Line, in as much as he's a country boy, he becomes a rock singer, he has to deal with drugs and with heartache and with problems with his marriage. Here's a clip.
Dewey, will you cut out that racket? I'm trying to feed your child.
How am I supposed to make it as a famous musician if I don't practice?
You stop talking about that music!
But it's my dream, baby.
Daddy said that if we move back home, he could give you a permanent job at the slaughterhouse. You can make an honest living. You wouldn't have to hang your head in shame, walking around like some kind of a failure.
Well, I think I'm doing okay for a 15-year-old with a wife and a baby.
Ain't no musician ever made no money, Dewey.
Edith, I am starting to think that maybe you don't believe in me.
I do believe in you. I just know you're going to fail.
Which, sadly, is kind of what happens with the movie. I mean, the thing is, it starts off all right, and taking the mick out of Walk the Line is fine. Walk the Line is a very good film, but, you know, doing a pastiche, it's fine. But that gag lasts for about 10 minutes. Now, there are some quite well-written comic songs, although I have to say nothing of the standard of the comedy songs of A Mighty Wind. I mean, you have to compare this sort of thing against A Mighty Wind and say, you know, it's just not up there. I mean, it's obviously not in the same league as Spinal Tap, but A Mighty Wind was beautifully done, affectionately done, had some kind of purpose. When you do a pastiche of a genre, it is not simply enough to reference movies from that genre. You have to do something funny. If you remember the Airplane movies, every single scene was overladen with, you know, sight gags and slapstick humour and clever, you know, there was so much stuff going on. You could see Airplane 3 or 4 times, you still wouldn't have got all the gags. In that, the, you know, gags came thick and fast. In this, they come thick and frankly slow. And you just think, well, if you're going to do rock biopics, broaden your horizon. Okay, they do a little bit of Ray, they do a little bit of What's Love Got to Do with It, but nothing more than simply invoking those movies and then moving on. And the particularly disappointing thing about it is this. It's produced and co-written by Judd Apatow, who everybody thinks is absolutely, you know, the great bee's knees because of Knocked Up and Superbad. And this just confirms all my suspicions about the, you know, the rise of the intellectual super nerd, and that it's really not all it's cracked up to be. I mean, Knocked Up is perfectly fine, but Superbad is still a film which is adequately reviewed by its own title. Also, when you have the pop biopic, which is so ripe for having the mick taken out of it. I mean, for example, did you ever see that film, The Karen Carpenter Story? Not Karen Carpenter Superstory, the Superstar, the fantastic...
The one with puppets.
No, that's the Todd Haynes one, Karen Carpenter Superstar, which is, in which it's animated Barbie dolls and Ken dolls, which is a brilliant movie and moving and inventive and funny. But no, there's a biopic called The Karen Carpenter Story, which has got one of the funniest screen moments ever in it, which is after the Carpenters have played at the Hollywood Bowl, they're sitting down at breakfast the next day and Richard Carpenter's reading the paper and he's saying, oh, we got a great review, everything's brilliant, everyone loves us. And Karen Carpenter says, does it say anything about me? Because she used to play drums in the Carpenters. And he says, let me just see. Oh, it says, the chubby drummer kept time. And the camera zooms in on Karen Carpenter. And she goes, chubby? And it's just, it's up there with, you know, Ray Manzarek discovering the rifter, you know, Light My Fug. No, hang on. Go out, you go. All that stuff is funny in and of itself. There's nothing in this even as funny as the weird naked Indian from Wayne's World 2, which, frankly, let's face it, is not setting the bar very high. So nothing like as funny as it needs to be.
This from Rob Stevens. Last film, going to the movie with your parents...
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an interesting thing. You know, once you get beyond a certain age, you don't normally do it, but there's a whole raft of people who are clearly still doing it or have done it. Rob says, the last film my parents saw at the pictures was the double bill of Enter the Dragon with Death Race 2000.
Wow.
Not sure of the year, but I do know they have yet to return to the cinema.
73.
So they haven't gone since 73. It's not quite what we were after. We're looking for the longest gap between movies, but clearly they saw that and thought...
There is nothing more to say.
I'm not going to do anything. And there's, hello to Malcolm, because he said, I'm normally a podcast listener, but I'm listening live tonight in Taiwan and watching online as well. Jason Isaacs, by the way.
Yes.
On this show next week.
I'm just...
So we won't have to do this particular part of the programme. Hello, Jason Isaacs. There you go. He's probably wearing a dress.
Hello to all the Yardbirds.
What? All the Yardbirds?
Yep.
How come they get a mention?
Because we got an email from their bassist saying that he was thrilled... to have heard us speaking highly of them. It's like as if anybody wouldn't speak highly of the Yardbirds.
So Focus, members of Pentangle, Fairport Convention, and now the Yardbirds are all getting mentioned.
Yep.
Every week?
Well, you know, as long as it remains in our consciousness. Always hello to Jason Isaacs. We haven't done David Morrissey.
Hello, David. Do you know what? We're going to have to try and get them to come on our fun run.
Yes, we are. Hey, that would be great if they did it with us.
Jason, when you're listening to this, we're going to ask you, so you prepare your
answer. He's dead fit, though. He used to be great at skateboarding. Well, he used to have a board with green Kryptonics. Now, you had to be fit to ride a board with green Kryptonics.
Jason just over one shoulder, David just over the other. But David Morrissey will want to be on a horse.
Yeah, and he's a giant anyway, David Morrissey.
He looks
like
good
six
in a hat.
Foot something.
13 to 4. We'll do some more of this in a moment. Still haven't got to Aliens versus Predator.
Requiem.
Which is on the way. Louise, first of all.
Thank you, Simon. The M1, two lanes are closed.
Steve, on this, there's no requirement for hats, tall hats, to be sold at the snack bar, because when you've finished your extra large portion of popcorn, you can use
the
popcorn
on your head.
As a tall hat.
Ba-boom.
I thought everyone does this, says Steve. Doctors Mayo and Kermode, I regularly download the podcast, but I'm listening live for the first time. Watching live, I'm struck by two things. The table is massive. Has it been purposely installed to prevent Simon leaning over and biffing Mr. Kermode every 20 seconds in the manner of a parent trying to control an ever-errant child? And secondly, the good doctor, the Kermode version, doesn't just look at the clock a lot. He also seems to be constantly fiddling with his headphones. Has the production team put some kind of itch lotion into them as a prank? I want to see Golden Compass, Charlie Wilson's War this week. Golden Compass disaster. If you've read the book, lots of fabulous, dark and intriguing pieces have been chopped.
Yep.
Charlie Wilson's War was wonderful. Lots and lots of stuff there from Simon Sadie. I edited that because we have some movies to review.
You know, if you go on to the YouTube thing where you can see this thing happening and all the comments, they all say... You know, it's funny, when I heard them on the radio, I thought they had a bit of a chippy relationship. But seeing them on screen, you realise they really hate each other.
Where did they get that from?
I know, exactly. You know, there's no...
I should come over and sit in your lap.
No, please don't do that.
As you do this next.
And I'm not fiddling with my headphones just because, you know, it's very hard to do this without messing up your hair. And when it's as important to you as it is to me, that's the deal.
Your hair wouldn't move if it was in a
hurricane. No, I know. I had a motorcycle helmet on. It didn't make any difference. So we'll do The Good Night and then Aliens versus Predator Requiem. The Good Night first. directed by Jake Paltrow, on the subject of pop movies which aren't anything like as good as they ought to be, two British washed-up pop stars played by Martin Freeman and Simon Pegg, both of whom I sort of like individually. They've had to go over to America, where they are no longer in pop bands now. Martin Freeman is an angsty, sort of, you know, tortured artist living with annoying Gwyneth Paltrow, and Simon Pegg is the person who's trying to crack the whip and tell him to do advertising jingles. Here's a clip.
Is everything okay?
You've got to cut out this artistic okay? You're weirding out the clients.
So, what do you mean?
Norman said Megalife played you an acoustic piece, so you could do a sound alike, and you gave them a flute solo and some slap bass.
Hey, I went with my instinct, and it wasn't slap bass. I wanted it to be original and great.
But they don't want great, okay? That's why they come to us, that's why they come to me, okay? Because they know they're going to get, you know, fine.
Yeah, but it has to be good.
Bad is good, okay? And don't use words like Gershwin and Sondheim. They don't know what that means. They think you're making fun of them, okay? They want a Cheers sound alike.
Cheers?
Yeah.
The TV show?
Yeah. Just please, mate, make it bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make it bad.
Good.
And they do make it bad. Now, here's the thing. I like those two actors, and I think together they're very funny. The movie itself is just all over the place. It's one of those. What happens is the Martin Freeman character is very disillusioned with his life, so he escapes into dreams, into lucid dreaming. He's taught how to lucid dream by Danny DeVito, and he goes into a lucid dream and he dreams about Penelope Cruz, and he has a whole other life relationship with Penelope Cruz. So it's a bit like Vanilla Sky, and it's a bit like The Science of Sleep, and it's a bit like Charlie Kaufman, it's a bit like Michel Gondry, although it isn't any of those things. And in the middle of it all, in the middle of this clearly unsaleable dirt of a movie, you've got Gwyneth Paltrow. You know what happened. Gwyneth Paltrow's sitting there and the agent rings up and goes, hello, Gwyneth. Yeah, hello. Because, she never does consonants. She doesn't do hard consonants.
She doesn't do consonants in the way you don't do impressions.
Yeah, but it's like they're kind of, it's an eco problem with doing consonants. Yeah. Well, hey, Gwyneth, the thing is, we really want you to do this film. It's not very good. It's not very well written. It's a bit Vanilla Sky and it's a bit like that. And here's, in the movie, you play an American, an annoying American who goes out with an annoying British rock star who's really whining and really nasal and really complaining all the time. So everyone's going to think it's that Chris bloke that you go out with. And everyone's going to feel morally impelled to make that gag. And you're going to come out of it rather badly, and there's going to be no money made by the movie. So what do you think? I don't think I'll do it. I'll tell you, the only other thing is, Gwyneth, it's directed by your brother. All right, then. And, so there's Gwyneth Paltrow, and it's the same.
The strange thing is, you actually looked like her when you were doing that.
Like Gwynnie?
Yeah.
I look a lot like Gwyneth Paltrow. I look very little, however, like Penelope Cruz. And Penelope Cruz similarly gets the phone. Hello, I'm Penelope Cruz. Yeah, hello, Penelope. We want you to do a film. It's like Vanilla Sky, when it's exactly the same premise in some guy having a dream, a creepy dream, and you're in the dream, and it's like Vanilla Sky without any of the good stuff. Do I have to go out with Tom Cruise again? No, you don't. Okay, I will do it. And that's the only possible reason for the movie having
German.
Those people in it. She is German, yeah. She's Werner Herzog's Bavarian
squeeze.
Cousin. And it's navel-gazing and noodly and self-indulgent. And I really want to like it, because I like some of the people involved in it, and other people involved in it I find rather annoying. And it just lies there and mopes around the office exactly like the kind of people that it sort of portrays.
Can you define noodly?
Stops. Yeah, noodly. Okay. Narrative, right? Noodly, 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 like that. You know what a noodle looks like?
Yes, so it's like an oxbow river.
I don't know what
that's
an
Oxbow Lake,
River. No, the Oxbow incident is a
meandering river.
No, meandering is more direct than noodly. Meandering means it kind of wanders around a little bit with some kind of purpose, but noodly means you might actually end up back where you started.
Oh, I got it.
Hence, noodly.
Got it.
So, rubbish. Alien versus Predator, Requiem. No, Aliens versus Predator, Requiem.
That doesn't sound like a fair matchup.
No.
Really?
Yes.
Lots of aliens against one Predator.
But there's more than one. Here's how
Why
it
isn't
works.
It
no, hang on. But wait, okay, wait. Here's the plot.
Yes.
Here's the plot. Okay. Years ago we had Alien, right, and it was slow and it was thoughtful. We had characters that you cared about. They're all kind of middle-aged and they're up in space and stuff happens, and by the time the really bad stuff happens, you really care about them, the characters. So when the thing bursts out of John Hurt's chest, wow, I really care because it's John Hurt. And it's designed by H.R. Giger and it's directed by Ridley Scott, who's a fine artist, and it's written by, writers that actually understand their craft, and it takes its time. Now we fast forward whatever it is, 25 years, and we have the Alien franchise. We go with Alien, Aliens, which is good, Alien 3, pants, although messed up by the studio, and then Alien Resurrection, which is not as bad as everybody thought. Meanwhile, Predator, which was always rubbish, Predator 2, which was super rubbish, then Alien versus Predator in the kind of King Kong versus Godzilla way. Now, Aliens versus Predator begins with a shot of the Predator with its chest burst open, out of which has come an alien, which has taken on some of the qualities of the Predator, therefore making it into a Predalien. Da-da! So the Predalien. A Predalien. And the Predalien...
Aliens versus Predator and Predalien.
And Predalien. And the Predalien is basically an alien with dreadlocks.
Isn't that a prog band that toured with Focus?
I think it was, yes. And I think the bassist from the Yardbirds was in them. So, here's the main differences, right? Firstly, where the other one had middle-aged characters we care about, this is just a bunch of young people, some of them running around in their pants, don't care about any of them. Secondly, it's all shot in that way, which the BBFC said that it's a violent film, but they gave it a 15 because it's all so fast-paced that you can't really see what's going on, and that's absolutely true. You can't see what's going on, and when you can see what's going on, you don't care what's going on anyway. You don't care about any of these people, where they live or die. Actually, you're more interested in how the Predalien got its haircut, how that mutation worked. Thirdly, at the end of the movie, they attempt to tie up the time scale of this movie with the time scale of Alien, which just leaves you sitting there going, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, and that character isn't called that, and what's he doing there? Fourthly, there is this just nuts thing when the original film throws back to things like Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires and It, the Terror from Beyond Space, and it draws on the, you know, the drawings and the paintings of Giga, and it's, you know, it's, it has a Jodorowsky legacy. This is essentially based on a video game. It's
a Jodorowsky legacy?
Yeah, you know, Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Can you define that briefly?
Yes, it's, if you imagine, well, Jodorowsky was at one point going to do Dune.
Right.
The science fiction movie Dune. And that was, I think, how Giga first got involved in the process.
Right, so the Jodorowsky legacy would be...
would be that it's to do with advanced grown-up science fiction for people who have brains.
Fine.
As opposed to thicko video game science fiction for people who, incidentally, the first movie is so much about male fear of pregnancy. And it's got this incredibly complicated sort of ecosystem about how the alien works. And this movie is made by people who seem to think that the throat is direct connected to the womb. Now, I'm sorry, did you not do Anatomy 101?
Do you think that might be missed by most people? Do you think everyone...
I think the target audience of it wouldn't know. I think they... Is that not true? I'm really surprised. It's rubbish. It's rubbish. And it's just noisy, badly shot rubbish.
On the subject of... I suspect this old people and movies thing might spill over somewhat to next week. Stephen in Solihull, my father once took my 88-year-old grandmother to see Trainspotting, mistakenly thinking that it was an innocent comedy about a group of middle-aged train spotters. They did sit through the whole thing, but my grandma was just happy to be out for the evening.
You know, I took my mum to see An Officer and a Gentleman, because I saw An Officer and a Gentleman, which I thought was just a wonderfully romantic movie. And
that doesn't really compare with that story about taking a grandma.
No, hang on. There is a point about this, which is, you've got an attention span of a gnat.
Come on.
Right, which is, when I took her to see it, it was only the second time around that I realised how fantastically sweary that film is. You know, it's like the first time you see it, you don't notice because you're not with your mum. The second time you see it, you notice that every other word is a rude curse word.
Craig in Newcastle, Simon Mark, not quite what you want, but my dad hasn't been to the cinema since seeing Jaws. He says it's too loud and he can't pause it to go and make a cup of tea. Tim in Torquay, my parents took me and my brother to see Superman on the big screen in Birmingham for my 14th birthday, January 1978.
You'll believe a man can fly.
The 30-mile trip home took hours, thanks to a thick pea super fog. My dad hasn't been to the cinema since 30 years and counting, and I can't see him going again unless they release Shirley Bassey, the movie. Guy says, heard you mention the good doctor mentioned Focus. I had the pleasure of managing and promoting some tours by the band in recent years. They're tremendously talented. So hello to Jan Ackerman, Thies van Leer, and the other one. And that's... Oh, right, well, we're out of time, because we've got Drive coming up in 30 seconds. So, movie of the week.
Well, I mean, clearly, No Country for Old Men, and also it is a contender for one of the movies of the year. It is going to be up there in the Best Picture nominations on Tuesday, which you can see and hear live due to the miracle of cross-pollination between radio and television at 1:30. Look at the way I slipped that plug in.
I think it's called 360-degree programming.
Is it?
Or, I don't know, something
is that what Linda Blair's
like
head was doing in The Exorcist? It's
almost
not the devil, it's 360-degree programming.
Okay, so we'll do more on that old people in the movies next week. Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.